Next case is Four to Go. Looks like Forgo, but we're not going to Forgo anything. Four to Go versus Pinterest et al., 2016-19-034-5. Mr. Bennett, when you're ready.
May it please the Court, my name is David Bennett and I represent the patent owner and appellant in this case, Fotigo. The District Court's holding that the claims were indefinite because the term at issue, the server control means, was in means plus function form and a disclosure, there was not sufficient structure disclosed in the specification, should be reversed. Because first, the server control term is not in means plus function form despite the presumption from using the term means, because there is a sufficiently definite structure disclosed in the claim language that is sufficient for a person of skill in the art to provide.
Where is that structure?
So what you have is a server. So first of all, I don't think there's any dispute that we're dealing with software on a server. So that the court has found in other cases, such as Altiris, where the word command was used, that denoted structure. The question was it sufficient structure? Here you have software on the server. It's not just any server. It's a server associated with the destination address. This is in the claim language. And that it's responsive to messages received from the camera that sends the message that contains a recipient code, in addition to the servers associated with a database that contains account configuration data associated with recipient code.
My understanding of your argument was that the term itself, the functional term itself, parsing, connotes structure. Wasn't that your argument? Server control means for parsing the recipient code to one of ordinary skill in the art. Once they see the functional term parsing the recipient code, they would immediately envisage structure.
That's correct. In this claim, that's correct. Because it is the parsing the recipient code is a one-step algorithm when the message is received by the server. Now, in this case, the message that's received by the server is known to contain a recipient code, which is important, because if you don't know it's containing a recipient code, you don't know what to ask for. But when you know that the message is containing a recipient code, and that's what the claim language says, parsing the recipient code from said message contains a recipient code, that is a one-step algorithm. It's one instruction. And that's why in the declaration submitted by James Barnett...
Has there ever been a case from the court where we took a seemingly classic means plus function limitation, means for performing a certain function, included no... The functional language in that means for performing a certain function... The functional language itself connotes structure and therefore takes the otherwise presumptively 112.6 claim out of 112.6.
In the Altiris case, which is 318 F3rd 1368, the court looked at the word commands and they found that commands represented structure in the form of software. Then the question became, was that sufficient?
Is the question to my answer yes? That we have taken a claim that actually said means for doing a certain function, and then we concluded that term wasn't a 112.6 term because the functional language was so strongly indicative of structure itself that it was outside of 112.6.
I would say if you just looked at the word means and the words following it,
yeah.
No, but if you looked at the words before it, for example, in Cole versus Kimberly-Clark, it was
perforation means?
The perforation means. So you looked at perforation
right.
means, and then you looked at the language following that.
I didn't see you relying on the adjective server control in front of means. I saw you looking really more at the word parsing. Is that right?
That was in one argument, yes, Your Honor. That when you're looking at the word parsing the recipient code from said message is defined earlier in the claims to contain a recipient code. So when you have a message that contains a recipient code and you know it, so you know it contains a recipient code, the instruction you need is simply parsing. It's a one-step operation as shown by the PHP code and the ASP code. The description in the claim for parsing the recipient code from the message is actually longer than the one-line instruction that would be used in the main programming languages at the time for sending messages using IP protocols. So, but if Your Honors don't agree that just looking at that, the line parsing said recipient code, you do have the server control means, which denotes structure in terms of software, and then you can look broader beyond that where there's a line of cases that look about input, output, and what the operation is. And here you have the input, which is a message containing a recipient code.
Did your expert in his declaration say the phrase server control immediately connotes sufficient structure?
I don't recall if he used that language, but he did say that the claim language did disclose that the software is on the server. So we're talking about server language, software
right.
on the server.
I mean, what I'm hearing today is different from what I remember from the briefs. You seem to have a two-prong argument today, which is let's look at the functional language parsing said recipient code, that connotes structure. Oh, and secondly, let's look at the term server control in front of the word means. That's also connotes structure. I mean, it suggests this is all happening on a server, perhaps, or accessing a server or something. But I didn't recall your argument resting on server control itself describing the specific software algorithm for performing the parsing.
The server control phrase refers to that it's software on the server.
Okay.
So you have software on the server, and this court has found that when you have software on the server is a structure. Now, is that sufficient structure? That's a different question. Just like in Altiris where it said commands denotes software, which is structure, but it found that in the claim language it was not sufficient structure. So in this case, because you're talking about a server control means for parsing said recipient code from said message, the server control just simply says that you're dealing with software on the server. The operation is parsing the recipient code from the message. Now, an argument made by the defendants is that, well, all the appellant is doing, all PhotoGo is doing, is looking at the functional language, which is not correct. Because when you're talking about software on the server, you're not talking about a generic server. You're talking about a server, as described in the claims, a server associated with a destination address, expecting messages from the camera, and is able to process those messages. It's looking for a recipient code. It has data to do something with the recipient code when it's received. And so when you get to the portion of the claim language where this term is at issue, server control means for parsing said recipient code from each said message, you are dealing with your recipient code that you pull out of there. No matter what you do, counsel said, well, there could be different programming languages, you can choose whatever. The recipient code is the recipient code. It's like setting a variable in a computer program. If X is set earlier in the program and you call X later, you can't do anything to change what that value is. So here you're talking about a one-step algorithm, which is simply calling the data that you know is there using an instruction that is well known to a person of ordinary skill in the art and can be provided or implemented by a person of ordinary skill in the art. There's no devising, there's no crafting, there's no creativity. You're not coming up with some algorithm that can come up with a different answer. The recipient code is the recipient code. This is like in power integrations where you had two signals that were coming in. The operation was comparing the magnitude of the two signals. Straightforward. That's what the court called straightforward operation. And then the output is, well, whichever one's higher, that determines what the output is. Very clear, very clean operation.
What was the claim language in power integrations?
It referred to, I believe this referred to a soft,
soft start circuit?
The soft start circuit, right.
And so then we said there that the term circuit already connotes structure, right?
They said it can connote structure. They said the court has found it.
There wasn't the word means in that claim, right?
That's correct.
So, whereas we have a presumption here that this claim falls in 112.6, in that case we had the opposite presumption. The presumption was that that soft start circuit claim term did not fall within 112.6.
That's correct.
And I can't remember if the strong presumption rule applied at that time.
I believe that
I don't know
the
if it was
strong presumption rule may have applied at that time for that case.
Okay. So,
but in terms of here, I mean, you're still, the presumption, as was made clear in Williamson, is just a simple presumption. To overcome that presumption is just a preponderance of the evidence. So when you're talking about means plus function, if the word means is used, it's slightly on one side of the 50%. If the word means is not used, it's slightly on the other side. So the court in Williamson said, you know, that looking at whether means is used, that tells you where the presumptions start, where the weight of the evidence begins.
Why do you think the drafters used the word means here?
Your Honor, I asked the inventor himself, and he said, you know, that's what I use. He said, I didn't think this was a very difficult thing. I thought every person skilled in the art would know. The expert in this case said, well, I know exactly what parsing means. I know it's on the server. So I don't know. There's a case where the court said, you know, it seemed that the inventor was enamored with the word means. And that just may be the case here. And in that case, the court found that some of the terms were not in means plus function format. So I think here it's one of those cases where it's not used in means because there is a very straightforward operation. And defendants submitted a supplemental case, the Alfred E. Mann case versus Cochlear, which talked about means plus function. One means plus function, what the court said was that one term was in means plus function indefinite because there were many different algorithms that could be used. It was not simple, and you could have many different outcomes. That's not the case here. There's only one outcome, which is getting out the recipient code. No matter how you want to use different languages to parse it, you always get the same recipient code.
But are there different sequences of steps to open the package and get out what you want to get out of it?
The evidence from the expert is when you know you have a message that contains a recipient code, you just ask for it. You say, I want this recipient. And that's looking at the claim language. Now, stepping to the question of if you find that it's disclosed, that it is means plus function, and you go to the specification. The specification discloses, first of all, just a block diagram where it can say you just asked for the recipient code. But it also goes through a step-by-step algorithm of how you create the message. And then it says parse something from the message. A person of ordinary skill in the art, as submitted by the Barnett Declaration, said, well, if I know how to put it together, I know how to take it apart and pull out the part that I need. And I would say this is a lot like Legos. My kids love Legos. And they may have a 600-piece Lego set and a 100-page instruction manual.
Counsel, you wanted to save some rebuttal time. You're mostly into it. You'd like to save the rest.
Thank you. I'm just going to complete my thought, and then if I sent a completed Lego structure with the instruction manual to somebody else and I said, page 56, pull out the red block, they would know exactly how to pull it off based on the instructions for how to do it. So therefore, we believe there's sufficient structure also disclosed in the specification. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lemley.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I believe I heard learned counsel make not one but two entirely new arguments here today. The first was that there was structure here not in the parsing function, but because the server was a special server that was somehow different than an ordinary computer server. That argument has never been made before in this court, and it's completely contradicted by the record.
You mean in this court or in this case?
In the trial court or in the briefing up until now, right? Before appearing in this courtroom.
Can I ask you to I'm focused on the following. we do have a case here in which the focus of attention is on words that come after the word means rather than words that come before the word means. There are a variety of cases of which you're familiar with them, Rembrandt, others, where phrases that say a XY means, notwithstanding the word means, is deemed to not be within 112.6. So why is, if one viewed this as the same thing as server control parsing means, so just move the parsing in front of the means instead of after the means, and there are reasons to think that one ought not to be so finicky about the placement of the word, as you know, then why is the expert submission of Dr. Barnett not enough to establish that that is structure?
Well, Your Honor, I think for several reasons. So to begin, this court has been clear that the function itself can't be the structure. And the briefing in the case, as opposed to the oral argument you heard, was focused on the argument that parsing itself was structure. Under the Altiris case, that's simply not permissible. So they fall back.
Why would that be different from, for example, the stuff that's in Rembrandt? Fractional rate encoding means. There's a word, encoding, or the trellis one, that sounds like a function, but in fact, the conclusion is there was a triable issue there on whether a word that sounds like function actually, when put together with the other words, is a structure. Why isn't their argument, perhaps a little bit recharacterized, that same thing? Server control parsing means. Parsing sounds like function, but it's not really. It is, in fact, a structure as a unit.
I think in the Rembrandt case, Your Honor, it's not the encoding that is serving the structural purpose. That's the function that's being performed. It is the fact that in addition to the word encoding,
here we have the addition of the word server control.
So that's correct. So the argument would have to be, it's not that parsing is the function, but that server control is the structure that performs that function. Now, a couple of things to note about that. First, it's waived. It is not the argument they made below. In fact, they ran away from it. It's not the argument they made in their opening brief.
They ran away from it. What would
they argued the opposite. We tried to focus attention on the word server control means. They, in their briefing, focused instead on the word parsing as itself connoting the structure. So I don't think they can make that argument now. But even if they were to make the argument, that argument would work only if the term server control itself connoted structure beyond a general purpose computer. This court's cases are absolutely clear that if the hardware structure is a computer, a general computer, and it is programmed with software, that you gotta look to the software structure, not just the hardware structure. There is no reason whatsoever, there's nothing in the declaration that says server control means is in fact special new structure that's different than a computer.
But why can't one read Barnett's declaration 307 to 310 or so as saying any relevant skilled artisan would read in this context the parsing and the server control as referring to this simple operation of, you know, looking at the upper left-hand corner of the package.
So I think, Your Honor, we need to distinguish server control from parsing, right? And when it comes to server control, both the briefing below by Fotigo and the Barnett Declaration itself expressly say that this is not a special server control means that's new and different structure, that this is a general computer. So Barnett at A306 says a person skilled in the art would understand that the server control would be software on a server that performs the processing or parsing of the recipient code from a message.
Does the word for have special relevance here? It means for parsing.
Your Honor, I think it is traditional that it invokes Section 112F. It's means plus function claiming. It suggests that parsing is the function. If, as they argued in their briefing, a parser was some special structure, one would have expected them to use the word parser rather than server control means for parsing. In any event, there is no argument made anywhere that server control means is a special structure, much less a special structure that implements in hardware rather than in software the parsing function. Everything in the case suggests exactly the opposite. The Barnett Declaration says we use the implementing structure is software on a server that performs the processing or parsing of the recipient code. In their briefing at A267, they made exactly the same argument. So I think they first have waived any argument along the lines of what you suggest. But even if they hadn't, it wouldn't matter. Because server control means can serve as the structure sufficient to take this out of 112F only if it, those words denote some special structure. There isn't anything that indicates that server control means denote some special structure, and that's why they made the argument below and in their appellate brief that parsing was itself the structure.
Can you step back for a minute and address the following. It may well be that we have a body of doctrine that establishes quite strong presumptions about how when you use certain words, they're going to mean a certain thing. When, as appears here, the function that's being claimed appears to be trivially unitary. Nobody has different, meaningfully different ideas about do it, about how to do it. What is the public notice indefiniteness function being performed, being served by saying, here, this is indefinite, full stop?
Understood. I think, Your Honor, that the goal is to allow people not to be able to ignore or elide how we did it and just get to any way we did it.
Right, but if there's no meaningful range of how we did it.
Well,
I don't see in the record that something, it's something that says there are a lot of different ways of parsing and they're kind of, you know, staking a claim to undefined territory.
So
it's entirely about language, not about what's beneath the language.
I think the purposes of the doctrine are more important in cases where the language is critical to the operation of the invention and less important when they aren't. But I will note that there is nothing in the record that suggests that parsing is all done in one way. And in fact, the record suggests the opposite. All we know about parsing is that there's a declaration from Mr. Barnett, and he says, people understand how to do parsing. And then at A307, he says, in fact, here are two different methods of how one would do parsing in different computer languages. Now, none of that is in the specification. None of that is in the claims. That alone, I think, is sufficient under this court's precedent to render it irrelevant. But it is worth noting that what he actually says is, here's one way you could do parsing in this language. Here's a different way you could do parsing in this language.
I don't know if this is even an intelligent question. He says, here are two different languages, two different strings of characters constituting the different commands in those languages, as you would expect, different strings of characters for different commands. Does that really refer to two different ways of doing parsing?
So the answer is we don't know. There is nothing in the record that suggests one way or the other whether that's true. What I will note, just as a because this is mischaracterized a little bit in the briefing, these are not one line code. It's not that you have to write one line of code in order to parse. These are calls to existing codes that are written in existing computer languages. So what this says is someone has already written a parser in ASP language.
And we don't know.
We don't know how it works. We don't know whether it works in a particular way. We don't know if it works in a way that's completely different than the one written in PHP in different code. And that to me is precisely the point. Right? The point of 112F is not just another enablement requirement. All of Mr. Barnett's declaration is directed to saying, in effect, people could figure out how to parse. They could go find existing software that's been written to parse. What 112F, I think, is directed to do is to say, you don't get to claim any possible means of doing this, any way of solving the problem. If you write your claim in means plus function format, you've got to point us to the particular means that you chose. And there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in the specification that does that.
What if the expert declarant said, all right, this means for parsing limitation, it's not the point of novelty in this invention. It's nothing close to that. It's the most tertiary, rudimentary component of this claim. And by the way, there's only three ways known demand to perform this parsing function, X, Y, and Z. And so anybody reading this limitation would just know to go off the shelf and pick X, Y, or Z. And so the concern about, preempting every possible way of performing the invention, it's really not that broad. It's just, if anything, capturing the three very boring known ways to perform this tertiary limitation, where the point of novelty is really in some other location in the claim. I guess to follow up on Judge Toronto's question, I'm not sure what our apparent rule accomplishes by forcing a patent drafter to actually have to write out and explain and arguably lard up the specification with, you know, descriptions of algorithms X, Y, and Z.
Three responses, Your Honor. I think even in that hypothetical circumstance, we might still worry that even though X, Y, and Z are the only ways known of doing this now, somebody's going to discover an entirely different pathway. And one of the reasons people write claims in functional format language is that they want to try to capture unknown things that might work in a completely different way. The law would prevent them from doing that. Second, there's no evidence that this is in fact true in this case. So that even if you thought in such a case,
wouldn't the law stop them anyway? Because then it would be, your claim would be restricted to X, Y, and Z, and perhaps under the doctrine of equivalence, something equivalent to that.
But I think that's precisely why
not later developed equivalence.
Well, I think that's precisely why Section 112F works the way it does. In the absence of the Section 112F rule, that would not be true. You would be entitled to cover later developed equivalents because we test enablement and written description at the time of filing, and they can incorporate later technologies. Section 112F, though, says something different. It says if you're going to write your claim language functionally, you don't get to own everything now known or later developed that might perform that function. You only get to own the specific things you identify in the specification as algorithms and equivalents thereof. And we do that so that you can't just be lazy and decide, I'm not going to tell you how I did it or if one is better than the other. If they were identical, you could probably list them all and say, you know what, I'll use X or Y or Z. I don't care because they all work the same. You might end up with relatively broad claims. The final point, though, I want to make, and this is perhaps the most important under this court's case law, is expert testimony is irrelevant on this issue. Right. This court has repeatedly said...
On which issue?
On the question of whether there is sufficient structure.
Well, but, I mean, we specifically... I mean, it seems to me Rembrandt and Lighting Ballast say the contrary. Why not?
Well, so what the line this court has drawn is between efforts to understand whether when there is structure disclosed in the specification, it is sufficient... for a person of ordinary skill in the art to understand and implement it, there you can use expert testimony. But you cannot use expert testimony to read in structure that is absent, to basically say, here is what a parser is, which is precisely what Mr.
I guess I read Rembrandt to say, here's this language. The district court had granted, I think it was summary judgment of indefiniteness by saying, there's no sufficient structure. We said, here's some one or more expert affidavits, declarations that say, no, that terminology is actually structure. It may not look like structure, but it is. And we said, reverse, that's a triable issue.
I think it could be a triable issue if there were...
The basis of the expert testimony.
It could be a triable issue if the factual question was, does this term actually connote structure? Is it well known as structure in the art, even though it looks like it's functional? That's not true here. And in no less than five cases in the last 5 years, this court has expressly said you cannot use expert testimony.
How many of them post-date Teva in the Supreme Court?
The answer is I think only one of them post-dates Teva, Triton Tech, Your Honor. But there's no reason to think that Teva changes this analysis because indefiniteness is itself a pure question of law. So the question we are asking...
We've said even since Teva indefiniteness turns on claim construction, which now has at least potentially a factual component to which expert testimony can be relevant.
So that's right.
And that's what we did on remand in Lighting Ballast.
So that's right here, but there's no testimony here that's claim construction relevant. What they're trying to do is identify a structure in the testimony that is not present or even hinted at in the specification. In Noah versus Intuit, this court says that is prohibited. They refer to the prohibition against using expert testimony. So too in Triton Tech, so too in Default Proof versus Home Depot. In Williamson en banc, this court said the testimony of one of ordinary skill in the art cannot supplant the total absence of structure from the specification. And in Eon versus AT&T, which is actually another post-TABA case.
Thank you, Mr. Lindley.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We know what our cases hold, and we'll hear rebuttal from Mr. Bennett, who has about a minute and 20 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the issue of using experts on the first step, Advanced Ground Systems, 830 F3rd 1331, used it for symbol generator to determine whether there was sufficient structure disclosed. Lighting World also did the same. Linear Tech also did the same. On the second step, expert testimony is regularly used, even in NOAA systems, which a defendant recognized. They said, even though the defendant alleged that there was no structure disclosed in the specification, the court looked at expert testimony because the defendant can't tell you to ignore expert testimony just by throwing up its hands and saying no structure. Second, the defendants are arguing that there requires a specific structure in the specification or in the claim language. This court has never required a specific structure. The language is there a sufficient structure? And when you look at, and there's never been a requirement to disclose code or a particular programming language anywhere in order to disclose specific structure. And when you look at the definition of algorithm, which is a series of instructions, in this case, you have a one-step instruction. One step. That should be sufficient structure. And then as with respect to the argument of what server control means, I apologize if the court misunderstands, but this is just the input-output objective argument that was raised not only in Barnett's declaration, but in the district court, and also argued in the opening and reply briefs that if there's an input, output, and objective disclosed in the claims, there's sufficient structure disclosed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.